Ah, the spring of 1993. You know, this is a season that's etched in my memory. As a Clemson junior, that year delivered what still remains the pinnacle of my concert experiences, U2's Zoo TV Tour. Meanwhile, the fictional Cheers Bar in Boston was saying its last goodbyes, attracting an audience of 42 million for its farewell. While Cheers wasn't really my scene, I've really been more of a Seinfeld guy. Jurassic Park premiered, leaving audiences, myself included, in absolute awe. Yet beneath the pop culture highlights of 1993, a darker narrative was unfolding. An episode overshadowed and often forgotten, America's most severe waterborne disease outbreak, affecting over 400,000 unsuspecting individuals. Welcome to The Outfall. I'm Robert, and here we dive deep into the intriguing tales of our water-centric world. In this episode, we revisit this crucial event. Dr. Ladner sat down with Ralph Welsh to shed light on this overlooked crisis. Let's dive in.
My name is Ralph Welsh. I'm a principal lecturer here at Clemson University. I teach in the Department of Public Health Sciences, where I mainly provide lectures to incoming freshmen and our undergraduates in the area of the public health sciences. A little bit of my background is I'm originally from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which relates a little bit to this podcast here. I have an undergraduate degree in health sciences, which I got from the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, which is on the north side, lakefront of Milwaukee. Did research up there, taught up there, was actually an athlete, coached college track and field at UW-Milwaukee.
So this is where the story begins. Ralph is coaching his track team.
So at the time, I started the season off with, hey, who wants to win a championship? Obviously, their response was, we suck. I'm like, anything can happen. Who knows, what will happen? And maybe it'll be next year. And it wasn't until we got to the indoor conference championships, which I was also informed that we had an ongoing record of taking last place every year at the indoor conference meet. But I was like, well, we'll just see what we can do. Yeah, this is the indoor conference championships, which I will admit I'm a big optimist. I didn't have much hope for success either, but I'm trying to sell my you rah rah. Let's just work hard. And maybe my message to them was focused more on, let's just try to run a little bit faster. Conference championships aren't really going to be happening this year because I saw all the powerhouse schools that were at this conference, which interestingly, the majority of those conferences or those schools in the conference were from my high school alumni on the south side of Milwaukee, some of the schools that were on the west side of Milwaukee, and in and around where this waterborne outbreak had occurred. Because of the way the suburbs are on the south side of Milwaukee, there are a lot of blue-collar communities. So really the distinguishing factor between them was, where did they get their water from? Yeah. The South Milwaukee, Cudahy, St. Francis, those schools that were right on the lakefront were getting water from that infamous Southside Water Treatment Plant. The schools where I was coaching, which were inland more, Muskego, Maguanago, Waukesha, you can hear all these Wisconsin names here. They were on a different water system, which again is April 3rd, 5th is when they first realized something might be going on, because that's when the health department, policymakers were first being contacted. But it wasn't really till a little while after that that our conference meet hit. So even at the conference meet, we knew something was going on, but we hadn't really realized the full magnitude of what was going on until I got to the meet and I realized all the bubblers at the meet, which if you aren't from Milwaukee, a bubbler is a term for a drinking fountain. They were all taped off, and the entrants who were supposed to be in the meets, there was mass dropout at the meet. So like in something like the half mile, there was several heats, might have had, several dozen athletes. There was hardly any athletes at all. And there was actually lots of open slots where they were just canceling heats across the board. And that's what led to the, let's try filling up these heats. Do you have any other athletes? At the time, I coached about 6 to 8 boys distance runners, and I had them maxed out in all their events. But as the interesting side of this tale goes, I had some shot putters and some triple jumpers that I was like, hey, can you walk a half mile? Because there's openings in the half mile. You know, can you walk a quarter mile, jog a quarter mile? And they were like, well, we'll give it a shot. And that's where they got in the meet or in the event. They scored conference points. And, you know, the big amazing story of this is we actually tied for, or I'll still say we won a conference championship because we were one of the only schools that weren't on that south side of Milwaukee water treatment. Now, my athletes who got conference points may not say, here's the times I ran. What they were looking at is I've got a ribbon. I scored points. And for one of the first times in a long time, Muskego won an indoor conference meet. And then personally for me, my athletes had a little bit more vested belief in my, you know, we can do anything. You know, I was even a little shocked thinking, how do we just win a conference championship? And then the team we tied with, interestingly, was a team that was also located inland in the away from that Milwaukee treatment plant where all the problems were.
Now, did any of your athletes get sick or affected, or were they all healthy?
Interesting at the time, because we still didn't know what was going on with this outbreak. They all, and as I mentioned, they all remember, don't drink water, don't share water bottles. I don't recall any of the athletes getting sick. Okay. And as I've told this story to my students here at Clemson for the last 20 years, I've even had this anecdotal, I don't know how I didn't get sick because I was still running in college, training post, you know, finishing off my undergrad degree. And I was like, I still drink water, but I know a lot of it was Gatorade coming from bottles. I probably somewhere drank some water, but I don't remember getting sick or any of my roommates getting sick. I remember getting up every morning, you know, getting the pots of water on the stove, first person up, sort of boiling the water. But we never got sick, and I don't think anybody in our school got sick. But fast forwarding to what we know about the outbreak, it was that Southside Water Treatment Plant where the main Cryptosporidium had entered the water system. Where I lived on the north side of Milwaukee, drinking their water, I didn't get any of that contaminated water.
Let me jump in here to explain what Cryptosporidium is. It's a microscopic parasite that causes cryptosporidiosis, a diarrheal disease with symptoms ranging from stomach cramps to nausea to severe dehydration. You know, while healthy individuals usually recover within 1 or 2 weeks, the disease can pose a serious risk to those with weakened immune systems, such as infants, the elderly, or people with chronic illnesses.
We didn't detect it till after the fact because it was, again, like CVS stores saying, we're out of antidiarrheal medicine. This is strange. We have the ERs are being flooded right now. Do you have any idea what's going on? And then the health department did kind of a retrospective, let's start to measure what's going on in the counties. Let's start to identify the pathogen, similar to like what happened with COVID. They finally found their first case of cryptosporidium or cryptosporosis in a stool sample. They knew what to look for. And then they actually went back. This is an interesting part of the epidemiology. They found some ice blocks that have been frozen that came from the south side of Milwaukee. And they had some ice that was being frozen from the north side. They isolated those ice blocks from the south side of Milwaukee, found, because that was being ice stored, that there was cryptosporidium in there at higher levels than we found in those other areas. Huh. Then through, again, backtracking, finally it discovered that on the south side of Milwaukee, their policies were, you know, every 2 to 8 hours, someone would take a look at the water, if it looked a little, you know, the turbidity was a little high, they would mark that down, but it wasn't that bad. They would actually analyze the water to see if there's anything in there. The levels were kind of high, but nothing that was above federal standards at the time. So we're good. Also unique about cryptosporidium is it's resistant to chlorine. So we are chlorinating our water. The levels were high, but not that bad. What we found out about cryptosporidium is it is resistant to the chlorine, and that turbidity that we were just looking at wasn't being or flagging that there's a problem. Forwarding to some of what Milwaukee's done now with some of the multi-million dollar upgrades that they've made. And if you've read any of the research, I think the numbers are the impact of cryptosporidium was about $92 million on lost work days and illnesses or business impacts. The repair and the updates they've made since then have, I think, are approaching about $500 million. And some of that is, instead of having somebody check to see if the water's cloudy, they now have a monitor that as soon as something gets high enough, the water shuts down right away. Wow. We don't wait for a week or two later going, what is happening? Let's go back and find out what's up. And that's one of the reasons why it spread so rapidly, because we were all drinking water still. We didn't know what was going on. And by the time we figured it out and had the boil advisory, you know, there was this, why are all the stores shut down? That was my experience was, you know, why are my restaurants shut down? The local sub shop I go to every day, why is it closed? Why are the banks closed? What is happening throughout the city? We really didn't know until, again, weeks later. And, you know, classic public health, like I teach my students, public health is the prevention of disease through clean water, air, et cetera. But often what happens due to policy issues, political will, funding is, I always say it's the stomp your foot. Why is this happening? Now we go fix it, usually at a much more expensive cost than if we would have ahead of time predicted what was happening. And something unique about Milwaukee, just to add on real quick, is that water treatment plant was coming out of World War I technology, 1920s technology, where, you know, we put chlorine in there, you run it through sand, that should work. But that year with massive snow we have in Wisconsin, there was a heat wave that came through. So there was major runoff in the fields to the rivers upstate more than ever before at a faster rate. That runoff from the fields overwhelmed the treatment plant. The chlorine didn't work. You know, the turbidity that we were recognizing, we thought, hey, it's fine. But as a result, it overwhelmed the system.
So take us back to right after your track meet. You said it took a little while for everyone to figure out that it was crypto. But then they did, and then these companies are selling water filters and making money. How long did it take to get back to normal, I guess, or to implement changes? Were people boiling their water or doing filtration for the next 2 years? Or how did that kind of happen?
Yeah, so that's a really good question, too. How did we rebound from the cryptosporidium? And this reminds me of COVID as well, too. We rebounded very quickly. If I can put this in the context of that infamous track season of 93, everything got shut down for that indoor meet. You know, there was mass absenteeism for that indoor meet. But as soon as we knew it was the water was shut down and no longer was this being spread. It wasn't something you would spread person to person. So from the indoor meet, which we won, people were still drinking the water. By the time the outdoor conference meet came around, we knew it was the water had been shut down. I think me personally, I was boiling water for 2 weeks. And then it was, we know the issue and everything was fixed. Our outdoor conference championship was not as productive for our team as it was for the indoor meets. I think we did come in very close to last place that year. We didn't have that X factor of the dirty water. So going to your question, how long did it last? It might have been, I don't know, maybe 2-3 weeks of, you know, what's going on, the impact being had. And then it was over, you know, because it was just a matter of south side of Milwaukee. We shut down the water flow, clean out the systems, install, you know, different methods of cleaning the water, tracking the water, and we're back up and running again. And then maybe 2 years later, you know, maybe the positive side of the story, 2 years later, my team was one of the top ranked teams in the state with my 6-7 boys. I had a girl that won the state mile championship. Fast forward 30 years, I realize it's been 30 years since the cryptosporidium outbreak back in 1993. That high school is actually a powerhouse track cross country school now. But we capitalized on that perfect timing of, you know, the cryptosporidium outbreak of that year.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's kind of funny. 93, I was like a freshman in high school. I guess I didn't really pay attention to the news at that time, and I don't remember hearing about it. But I've always thought of the crypto outbreak once I did learn about it in grad school, as being like in the, I don't know, 50s, 60s, 70s. But this is 93, you know, this is pretty recent.
Yeah, and that's something also that's changed. You know, you mentioned that in 93, you didn't really hear of it. You know, I was graduating from my undergrad degree, and I didn't really hear about it either. But think about, as we talk about getting awareness out there, back in those days, even in the 90s, I like how you mentioned, we think of cryptosporidium as something back in the 20s, 30s, 50s when we had water problems. In the 90s, we really in America assumed that we had great water. We had, the science had been applied. Everything was working well. But yeah, like with COVID, and this is something I teach in my classes, we've seen the shift from infectious diseases being the major causes of death in America to, as we entered into the 1900s, it's all chronic disease. So there becomes this, why do we really focus on infectious diseases anymore? Unless some new and emerging pathogen that we've never seen before can beat our system. And I think that's what happened with the water. We didn't expect cryptosporidium to be resistant to chlorine and everything that's working well. And then going back to the communication at the time, I reflect back and my news came from turning on the TV. You know, we had 3 channels you could watch, maybe the UHF channel if you move the rabbit ears. I didn't watch that much. You picked up a newspaper. Or if you watch the news, it was a 30-minute broadcast. Nowadays, we have Twitter, we have Facebook, we have, you know, 24-hour news, so we can get that information out quicker. And I'll say the right information, counter information, and misinformation. But at that time, you were very much like myself. I didn't realize anything was going on because the news I got was, my sub shop isn't open because something's going on. Somewhere I heard that I have to boil my water. Wasn't exactly sure why. So information didn't spread as quick. And maybe just to throw one more little analogy on here, because I like to use this. When I teach critical thinking, and I think I share this in my institute, I do community theater. One of my favorite roles was being the scarecrow in The Wizard of Oz. And I present to my students when I talk about critical thinking, as I say, there's the ability to be stupid, there's the ability to be ignorant, and there's the ability to be a critical thinker. Mm-hmm. You know, stupidity is we just don't know how to think. Ignorance, as many of us in higher education know, we are very ignorant. We just don't have the information. Critical thinking's now when we take all this extra time and effort to process the information in a critical thinking way. I like to challenge my students often by saying, if I'm just a scarecrow hanging out on the pole, life is a whole lot easier just watching those crows eat my corn. But if I want to save the corn, if I want to promote the community, now I've got to take that extra step and go from just having the ignorance and saying, how do we think, work with the challenges, and the goal or the resulting reward of that extra level of thinking is we can protect our water systems. We can protect ourselves against new and emerging diseases. We can combat mental health issues. We can deal with opioid epidemics. We can be a healthier country, you know, as our Constitution says, or as we have in our country, we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that's what this is all about, you know. Not to get in my soapbox too much, but I'm getting revved up and prepped for my new semester here.
This is great. That's great. No, I totally concur with everything you're saying. I think the crypto outbreak is just a nice case study that kind of encompasses everything you're saying.
And it's definitely, I think what was so, as you were alluding to, what's so unique about crypto is we just didn't see that coming. Yeah. We figured we have great water. We stopped thinking about it. And then, and I'm still baffled by it, you know, 400 plus thousand people were knocked out within a week or two with massive intestinal distress, businesses being shut down. It wasn't just like, oh, the local food court, there's some people getting sick. It was, you know, 25% of the city of Milwaukee, which is a major metropolitan. I believe it was like 1.6 million people at the time. And if you go to the south side of Milwaukee, which is where most of those cases happened, on that side of Milwaukee, it was probably...
percentage.
Yeah, I mean, just take that percentage and say, you know, if we just do simple math, you know, it's probably 50% of those people getting sick with major problems. And if you were unfortunate enough to have an immunocompromised system, you know, the death was in there too.
Well, you know what's cool about it, though, is this became... Well, our regulatory environment changed. The way you have to do disinfection changed. And so you wonder how many outbreaks were prevented after this one.
As we draw this episode to a close, we're reminded of the ripple effect a single event can have on an entire community. You know, underscoring this indispensable role of our robust infrastructure in safeguarding public health. In response to the devastating Cryptosporidium outbreak, Milwaukee made sweeping changes, upgrading their filtration systems, pioneering ozone disinfection on a grand scale, and intensifying water quality monitoring. These lessons from Milwaukee echo across our nation, highlighting the continuous evolution and dedication of the water community. Huge thanks to Ralph for offering his insights and stories today. You know, here at The Outfall, we dive into these water tales that matter, stories we tell each other, even off the air. Thanks again for the support you all give us. Love it. This keeps us going and propels us forward. Till next time, stay curious.